Welcome to the Dairy Farmers of Canada's research podcast series, Paths to On-Farm Excellence, where we discuss priority topics for Canadian dairy farmers. My name's Stephen Roach. I'm an epidemiologist with a passion for dairy cattle health and welfare. I did my master's and PhD trying to understand how farmers, their staff, and their advisors can work together as a team to improve. And I'm part of a team that's working with the Dairy Farmers of Canada to help showcase the latest in dairy research for Canadian dairy farmers, advisors, and their supply chain. You'll find this channel features a number of different series, from animal care to biosecurity to research summaries and beyond. This podcast series features conversations with farmers, veterinarians, nutritionists, hoof trimmers, and other farm advisors, researchers, and many other industry stakeholders. Our goal is really to provide farmers and their advisors with useful information that can be applied back home on the farm. If you like the content here, don't forget to subscribe to our feed and tell your friends. Over the years, we've seen a continued increase in the number of farms using automated milking systems. In Canada, we've seen an increase from coast to coast, with nearly one-third of farmers in BC on robots, to roughly 16% in Ontario, and between 14 and 25% in Atlantic Canada. So, what sort of benefits should robotic milking provide to producers? And what benefits should robotic milking provide to the cows? And perhaps most importantly, what are the impediments to good health and production on robotic farms? This is what we're going to explore today. Our next discussion is with Dr. Trevor DeVries, a professor and Canada Research Chair in Dairy Cattle Behavior and Welfare in the Department of Animal Bioscience at the University of Guelph. Dr. DeVries' area of research includes understanding the effects of feeding management on the behavior of dairy cattle, the effects of early feeding management and housing on calf and replacement heifer feeding behavior, and the effects of housing and management on the behavioral patterns and risk of illness in dairy cows. So, let's jump in. Okay, well, Trevor, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with us today. Really excited to dig into your research, your knowledge, your understanding, and a little bit of sort of the past, present, future perspectives on robotic systems. So thanks very much for being here.
Well, thank you very much for the invite.
So we've got lots of listeners that will no doubt know who you are. I've introduced you a little bit already, but just for our listeners here, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you come from, a little bit about your research program.
Perfect. Yeah. So Trevor DeVries, I'm a professor and Canada Research Chair with the University of Guelph. In that role, primarily a research role, studying dairy cow behavior, management, nutrition, welfare, and also a research or teaching component to my program as well. So teaching students, undergraduates, graduate students in dairy cattle management and dairy cattle behavior and welfare as well. Built a program that's really centered around what I would say is doing things that are good for the cow and that at the end of the day then provide benefits for the dairy producer, and specifically looking at cow behavior, how that is influenced by management, by nutrition, by housing, and in an effort to identify things that are really going to improve efficiency on farm, improve cow health, production, and the welfare of the cows that we take care of.
So, you know, you've mentioned a number of pieces there. Automated milking systems, robotic technologies, that's been an area of focus for your research and over the years. You know, what you got you into robots and, you know, some of that, so specific aspects of sort of how this influences the cow?
Yeah, I guess there's a couple things that really got me interested in working with robots. Some of it just stems from the growth that we've seen in the industry associated with the adoption of that technology and the need for research as we move into an area where there was little research to start with. And so that's a good driver there. I also really like the idea of someone who studies cow behavior, the idea that yeah, a lot of the successes and failures related to robotic milking come back to the behavior of the cows and whether or not those cows are, say, voluntarily milking and visiting that milking unit. And so some of the challenges that we have related to that come back to nutrition and management and housing. And so that's really kind of piqued my interest and why we've got involved in this research and focused a lot of our research efforts in the last 5 to 10 years on that topic area.
So we'll get into some of the specifics of what you've been researching, but if we want to sort of start off at a high level and thinking about our listenership, you know, producers, other folks in industry, maybe across Canada and beyond our borders as well, what do we know about sort of rates of adoption or how common it actually is to see automated milking systems on farm in Canada today?
Yeah, it's a good question. I was trying to dig up the very most recent numbers quite recently. I don't have those on my fingertips right now. Just over a year ago, we were looking at about 15% of all dairy farms on official milk recording milking with robots. And so if we think about probably those farms that aren't on milk recording, the numbers of farms with robots is probably pushing between 15 and 20%. With at least probably about 20% of our cows in Canada being milked by robots. And so that's a significant proportion of the industry and rivaling some of the countries that have had robotic technology or adopted robotic technology earlier than Canada. And we still see growth in the industry today. So a lot of farms that are looking to upgrade or change milking equipment on their farms are still moving towards robotic milking systems. For a variety of reasons, a lot of that's labor-driven, but then some of the benefits also that potentially can come with that. That growth has been really exponential. I'd say 10 to 15 years ago, when the technology was still in its infancy in Canada, we were only looking at a couple percent of,
right,
of farms using that technology at that time. And so, yeah, we often get the question of how much of a trajectory that will stay on, right? Like, is it going to continue to grow exponentially? And it's hard to predict,
sure.
But kind of based on what we're seeing now, there's really not a huge slowdown to speak of yet.
It's really interesting. Yeah, I guess as we have additional labor challenges and all sorts of new research exploring how we do this more efficiently, it makes some sense, right?
Yeah, as the technology itself continues to get better, that's a component of that. As our knowledge about the management of those systems increases, that helps contribute to that. And then, like you said, too, just looking for labor efficiency,
right,
and then improvements in our management. And those are some of the things that are really driving this move.
Right. So, you know, inevitably adopters of early technologies, even though it's, you know, these aren't per se new to the industry, they're going to come with challenges as well, perhaps unique to these types of facilities. What do we know about some of the challenges that folks that are in robotic milking systems actually face?
Yeah. Again, good question. The challenges with robotic milking systems, I think we used to think they might be related to maybe the equipment itself. But in reality, the equipment that we have is, even though it in itself has improved dramatically, I would say for the most part that never was really any part of the so-called issues, right? I did mention before the fact that When we think about robotic milking, one of the keystones to that is the fact that the cow is milking voluntarily. And so one of the challenges that has always been there and continues to be there is making sure that that cow can do that. And so and that can be influenced in a number of ways. So it could be a behavioral thing where the cow is not able to go milk when she wants to, which could be influenced by facility design, stocking density, management. And then it could also be situations where the cow doesn't want to go milk or it's difficult for that cow to do so. And that could be related to, say, maybe her individual behavioral profile. There's differences in the way cows behave, and that's something that we're looking in different research right now. And then also even the health of the cows. So the mobility of cows is hugely important. We know that lameness is a big issue in the dairy industry and can be a big issue. And the effects of that can be even greater in, say, a robotic milking scenario where we're relying on that dairy cow to, again, voluntarily go to that robot. And if she's experiencing any kind of pain or impingement on her mobility, then, she might not visit that robot as frequently. And kind of then the benefits that we want to achieve with these systems starts to be impacted.
Right. Yeah, it's really interesting. There's so many factors at play, too, right? So that's a nice preamble probably into some of the more recent research you've been looking at some of those factors that are perhaps influencing the cow, the outcomes that we see on farm across a variety of farms. So tell us a little bit about some of the most recent research you've been digging into.
Yeah, so we've been working on a very large, actually national project looking at benchmarking robotic milking management and housing practices across Canada, and then specifically focusing within that on is trying to identify what housing management nutrition factors are really associated with better production and efficiency on these farms, and then also the interaction of health in that as well. And so if there's certain aspects of health like lameness and other kind of disorders, maybe early lactation disorders like ketosis, that might be influencing cows in those systems, and what are those, some of the risk factors for some of those things as well.
So what led you to exploring those? Was it previous work that sort of, you know, stimulated this question? Was it what you just mentioned about just it's multifactorial and we want to start digging into the layers of this?
Yeah, the research really stemmed from some other projects that we had done kind of leading into that. And so going back 5 to 10 years, we had done a few, I would say, smaller kind of observational studies looking at some of these things, specifically focused within Ontario, but also we had done at the time some work in Alberta on some farms, dairy farms there that had adopted robotic technology. And we had identified or started to identify how, yeah, some of these housing and management factors were really having a or being associated with vast kind of production differences between some of these farms. And so we wanted to kind of take that to the next level and look at this from a real national perspective to see, yeah, whether or not there was really any kind of similarities across the country in terms of challenges, as well as some of the, yeah, housing and management factors that we say identified to be associated with greater productivity and production in efficiency on these farms, whether or not those were, again, consistent across the country, and if there was anything maybe even specifically regionally that might be different amongst those farms.
Very cool. So tell us about how you kind of tackled that kind of project. It's in, you mentioned national in scope. That means there's plenty of people involved, no doubt, and plenty of, I imagine, partners. What does that look like in terms of actually executing?
Yeah, so this was truly a national project, and so this was a project that was funded under the Dairy Farmers of Canada Cluster 3 research program, led by our group at the University of Guelph. But we had collaborators in this project also from University of Calgary and University of Saskatchewan. And what we did was basically with a team of students starting back already in 2019, we recruited a large cohort of farms that were milking with robotic systems. And so at that time, we recruited just under 200 farms from coast to coast across Canada. And during that initial summer, we actually visited each one of those farms. And when I say we, it was a team of students and a couple different teams of students that made those farm visits. And the idea at that time was to really get lay the groundwork for this whole project in terms of collecting some basic information about these farms, conducting surveys directly on farm, measuring different aspects of the housing and whatever other information we could gain at the time. And then at the same time, collecting production records, health records, any other milk information that we could from those farms. And that collection and feed information, and that collection's actually continued from 2019 to, yeah, even more recently. And we're still working on that data. There's various aspects of it. Some of our initial analyses were simply to look at, again, how some of the variability in housing and management practices really associated with production differences that we're observing on farm. And we did that with our full sample of dairy farms. We've continued to look at some more specific questions related to lameness and how that, again, impacts production on these farms. And we did that with a subsample of farms, specifically in Ontario. And again, looking for risk factors for that as well. And then in some kind of novel analysis too, we actually were able to gain access to bulk tank milk fatty acid data from a large subset, over 120 herds from Ontario and Quebec, and look at again how that milk quality and specifically the fatty acid profile of those farms, which we know gives us a bit of an insight into the health of the cows on those farms and specifically the rumen health of those cows. And we were able to then associate that as well with some of the management practices or differences in management practices that were being observed on those farms.
Wow. So I guess if we start with that first bigger initial objective you said at the national level, I guess the big question is, what are some of the things you started to uncover?
Yeah. And again, it was interesting to note that, again, we went into this with an open mind in terms of we tried to measure as many factors that we think could have potentially been associated with greater production, greater efficiency on these farms. And with probably a notion in the back of our minds that we'd think there would be some kind of very robot kind of specific management things that we would identify. And I guess the interesting thing is at the end of the day, many of the things that we observed and were able to associate with greater productivity and efficiency on these farms were really no different than what we've observed in other studies of conventionally milked herds. Specifically, and again, there's a fair list, I guess, of things that we were able to focus on. But really, I think the common things were things around ensuring good feed access, good cow comfort, so adequately sized stalls, deep sand bedding, things that we know, again, from a cow comfort perspective are important. We also know from a milk quality standpoint, those things are important. And we observe the same thing there. Good air quality was another one. And sufficient just space for those animals, both feeding space and barn space as well, being important for, really allowing those cows to optimize their production in those systems.
Was there anything that particularly surprised you? Was that in and of itself surprising that there just wasn't, it perhaps is sort of maybe a common take home message is do the right things consistently and regardless of facility type or milking system, you may achieve success.
Yeah. Again, I don't know how surprising that is. I guess in retrospect, it's probably not surprising because we've seen this in so many other situations. Maybe one of the things, and that's something that we're continuing to look into, is specifically how big of an impact ventilation actually and air quality had in these barns. And we saw some really neat differences between farms with more mechanical ventilation versus those without. And so that's something that's actually set up some future research that we're going to be looking into, right? So again, we know air quality is important, but why might it be even more important in a robotic scenario? And that could be related to the fact that, yeah, maybe that influences the behavior patterns of those cows in those barns. And that's a question that we are going to be hopefully looking into in the future. So, beyond that, it's mostly, like I said, confirming things that we know. But again, there's no harm in that often with research, because I think, especially for dairy producers, it's really good to see that, like to be able to identify that, yeah, these are the things that we're told we should be doing on farm, and they actually do make a difference, right? Because we can do these really controlled kind of studies where we look at these individual factors, but until we see those things playing out in the real world, that's really where we see a lot of kind of gain as far as adoption goes within the industry. And I think this helps the dairy producers who see this research as coming from Canadian farms conditions that, yeah, they are familiar with. They're able to identify with that and say, hey, okay, maybe I do need to look at my management, right, in association with this. And is there something I can do to tweak that or to make a difference for my cows?
Right, yeah. So real world, commercial, practical, these kinds of things matter and are directly influencing production on Canadian dairies today.
Yeah.
Yeah, very cool. How about, you mentioned some of the, and I know it's ongoing, there's a little thing called COVID that probably disrupted a bit of progress here, but some of those subset analyses you mentioned, either focused on Ontario or the fatty acid profile work, is there anything coming out of that work yet you can share, or is that sort of stay tuned?
Well, so, Yeah, we did have a few kind of slowdowns and hiccups. For example, in the summer of 2020, we were supposed to visit those farms all again. We couldn't do that, but we were able to actually virtually collect kind of further information from those farms. We were still able to make really good progress, and as I described too, the national kind of benchmarking study, we were able to actually publish the results of that. The other work that I described, looking specifically at lameness on that subset of farms, and then the milk fatty acid content, we were able to publish those as well. So made very good progress there. We do have more work that's ongoing. One of the big things we also wanted to do as part of this was a benchmarking of dietary differences across these farms. And so we collected feed samples from all these farms as well as collected dietary information. Now, some of that got slowed down, and specifically collecting some of that diet information. We do have that all now. We're putting that together. We've analyzed all the feed samples. We were able to actually present some of that at some previous meetings to at least to get some of that information out. And we're hopefully going to be able to put some of that information together into a nice publication coming up in the next year or so, focused on that. There's other aspects of the study too that we've been looking at and trying to put together. One of them specifically is focused around the incidence of ketosis in these herds. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the specific objectives that we came into this project with, is to specifically look at early lactation health in cows and robotic milking systems. There had been some previous work done at the University of Guelph by one of our former grad students working in the Ontario Vet College, who had identified actually in a subset of herds in Ontario from years back, the potential that there might have been some increased prevalence of subclinical ketosis in cows that were milked in robotic milking systems. And again, it's not necessarily a one factor kind of contributing thing. So there could be a whole host of reasons why that was observed. So one of the objectives that we have and we still have, and we've done some preliminary analysis, but we're waiting on actually some of the nutritional information to really complete that analysis at this point, is to really identify what might be driving some of those differences again between farms. In our initial analyses, we see that, yeah, the rates of ketosis in these herds, particularly subclinical ketosis, are similar, if not higher, than what we see in conventional herds. And so what we're trying to do is identify whether or not there's, yeah, specific, maybe robot-specific management practices that might be related to that, or again, just in general, is there housing or management differences? And then is there maybe differences in diets between those farms and that are seeing those elevated ketosis rates?
Interesting. Did you see across any of the sort of the pieces of work you're talking about here, meaningful regional differences?
Well, we do observe some differences in terms of production level. Again, not dramatically different.
Sure.
We didn't really observe any kind of interactions between, like say, other predictors, housing management predictors, and say so those regions, which is really interesting in itself, because we know that there's vast differences in dairy farms across the country. Some of that's climatic differences, right, in the way we even design and build our facilities for our cows, and obviously the environment that they're exposed to, temperature and humidity wise, both summer and winter time, can vary dramatically across the country. And then also the crops that are grown vary that much across the country as well. And so the diets that we're feeding to farms from British Columbia vary from the prairies, and that varies from Ontario and Quebec and the Maritimes, right? And so we would expect that, yeah, potentially we might see some differences there. And we do see that when we look at the diets, and that'll be kind of interesting as we continue to delve into some of that data, as to see whether or not some of those differences are actually having impacts.
Very cool. Yeah, it's interesting. I'm always amazed at how consistent some of these results can be across regions and how differences sort of pop up here and there and whether or not they're meaningful in terms of the outcomes. So that's really interesting. You know, I guess one of the important take-home messages here is that whether you're in an AMS system or not, we are talking about management factors, we're talking about housing factors and putting it all together to try and optimize production and outcomes. Is that a fair takeaway, or would you state it differently or maybe refine what I've said for producers that might be listening in terms of what the key take-home or series of take-home messages are from the work you've done thus far?
No, I think that's a fair summary. Again, what we identify often in this kind of research, as well as similar type research projects that we've done, is that it often comes back to what I would like to describe as some of the basics, right? Now, again, some of these basic things might not always be that easy to implement for every farm, and there can be challenges associated with that. But really, like, when we get down to kind of the nuts and bolts of, right, of what good production and good health means on dairy farms, or how that really comes as a result on dairy farms, it really comes back to, yeah, doing well for the animal in terms of meeting her needs from a feed, from a water perspective, from a behavior standpoint, from a comfort standpoint, allowing the cow to do the things she needs to do, mm-hmm. right? Minimizing that cow spending too much time on her feet, right? So that comes back to the comfort thing, where that might lead to more lameness and all those kind of things. Allowing that cow to rest when she wants to, allowing her to maximize her intake, making sure there's feed always in front of her. And if we do those things, generally we see really good results. And that's, again, something we see across the industry. We can tweak little aspects of our management and our diets. And again, we can make incremental gains from those things. But really, at the end of the day, what separates out kind of those herds that are doing really well from a production standpoint versus those who might not be doing as well as they hope to do, it comes back to, yeah, meeting a lot of those kind of just basic behavioral needs of those cows on those farms.
Right. So where do our listeners, or those that want to get more information, where do they go? Do they need to find sort of the primary publications to get sort of the nitty gritty on some of this work? Trevor, are there other places where they can maybe get access to some of this info?
Yeah, well, again, if you're really keen and you want to read journal publications, and then by all means, you can do that. Those are available online, and that's fine. But yeah, we also try to do our best to get this information out in other forms and facets as well. So some of this work has been already published in various trade magazines in terms of summary articles. We're doing podcasts like this, trying to, right, disseminate some of this information. And then other webinars, recorded webinars, live presentations at various producer meetings. As much as we can, we're trying to get the message out regarding this research.
And last question for you, just as we wrap up here, is you've mentioned a little bit about where you actually started to go in terms of next steps. What do you sort of have in mind for some of your, you know, how do we take this research and look 3 to 5 years out? What's some of the next questions we need to explore?
Yeah, I think I touched on a little bit of that already. Like some of the key things that we've identified in terms of some of the associations we saw. Now, again, I think some of the stuff related to cow comfort and bedding, like using sand bedding and things like that, which we've known already in the industry is good for cows and production and health. I don't think we necessarily need to delve into too much more. I did talk a little bit about some of the work that we're hoping to do related to climate and environment of cows, right? And so, yeah, in Canada, we don't often think about say things like heat stress as much as other places might in the world. But we do know that there are certain time periods of the year where dairy cows experience very severe episodes of heat stress, but then also potentially swings in temperature, right? Mm-hmm. So highs and lows, so to speak, where we've got maybe variable winter climates in certain places too, and how that might influence cow behavior, even though for the most part these cows are kept in ventilation controlled barns,
right,
doesn't necessarily mean they're immune to some of those environmental swings, so to speak. And so that's an area I think as we see more kind of public interest in some of those things too, that we want to delve into. And then refinements, I think we continue to work, our group, and we collaborate with others on the nutritional management of cows in these facilities. And that's where we've had more challenges. We used to think about dairy cow nutrition as a really kind of dialed in system. We knew exactly what we're doing. Everybody was trying to do very similar type things. And then we started milking cows with robots. And we realized that, yeah, there's a lot of different ways to kind of achieve similar outcomes, and not necessarily one way that kind of trumps everything else, right, in terms of that looks best. And so some of our research kind of moving forward, I think, has to be, looking at that and trying to say, well, is there commonalities in our nutritional programs and dietary approaches that are probably best from a health and production standpoint on these farms.
Great. Well, it sounds like there's a lot more to the story, and we'll stay tuned for it. Thanks very much, Trevor.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Dairy Farmers of Canada's research podcast series. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. For more information, please visit dairyfarmersofcanada.ca/en/dairy-research. This podcast was narrated by myself, Stephen Roach, edited and produced by Carly Wright. Thank you to our guests and to you for listening. The project is part of Dairy Research Cluster 3, a national research funding program made possible by Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada's Agri-Science Clusters program, the Dairy Farmers of Canada, Lactinet, and Novalay.